Hello and welcome to episode 73 of Ardent Run Club. I'm Tommy, I'm your host, and today I'm joined by a three-time British triathlon champion, a 10-times British Masters champion, former Ironman record holder, and literal legend. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the one and only Mike Harris. Mike, how are you? Thank you for joining me. How are you doing today?
Yeah, well, lovely introduction. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fit and well and healthy, and yeah, just another day for me. So yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for joining me, man. It's been a long time coming. We obviously chat a few weeks ago to get this arranged. So I do appreciate you joining me today for the 73rd episode of Ardent Run Club. So thank you.
My privilege. Thank you. Thanks for inviting us on.
Of course. Well, I think we'll get into all the details of your running, your triathlon, all your sports, but I wanted to just read off this list of personal sporting achievements that I've got down here for you so that people know who we're dealing with. So as I said in the introduction, 3 times British triathlon champion, 10 times British Masters triathlon champion, 10 times Northern triathlon champion, former British Ironman record holder, top 10 placings in the European Championships, top 15 in the World Championships, member of Team GB for 10 years, winner of 47 Open Triathlons, Northeastern Counties Marathon Champion. Like, the list continues to just go on and on and on. Wow. That is, yeah, that's something.
It reads quite well, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. I didn't put it down there, but there were medals that I won in European competitions as well. You know, we got 3 silver medals, but they were relays, and I was the 8th in the Europeans and 14th in the world as well. When I'm an amateur as well, which makes it quite different from the run-of-the-mill kind of, no offense intended, professionals who are kind of doing it as a job, really, with all of that, and 2 kids and everything else that goes with it, you know, and a very good wife, obviously, as well, to put up with.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's really impressive. I love the part that says, represented school in football, rugby, athletics, cross-country, cricket, and was part of school gymnastics display team. Mm. Gymnastics. Yeah. Yeah. I would never have thought.
No, well, I was a gymnastics coach as well later on in life, you know. But I don't know whether you'll come to this anyhow, Tommy, but I went to a boarding school at Bellingham.
Mm.
Wasn't a posh one at all. It cost a pound and a shilling to keep me there every week, you know. But it was a school out in the sticks there at Bellingham, and it was a mixed school with girls there as well. They were kind of billeted about 100 yards away from us. There was 4 dormitories for them. There was 4... Mm. Down the bottom end, but it was a highly active athletic school. I think being the age we were, between 13 and 15, they probably had to wear us out a little bit, otherwise you'd get mischief, you know.
Yeah.
But that was a big part of my development as well, if you like. It was absolutely terrific little school, yeah. Terrific.
That's massive. Yeah, that's so cool. So I guess, let's just get into it today. So I guess the best place to start is always the beginning. So tell us what got you into running, what got you into triathlon, what kind of got you into those sports?
Yeah, well, with running in particular, I think it is more instinct than anything. From the earliest of ages, we ran around here, you know. If I can just momentarily, Tommy, and you stop us if I go on too much, but momentarily take you back to the 1950s when I was born in 1951. Mm-hmm. And life in that period, certainly the 50s and moving into the 60s, was so incredibly different from what it is now.
Yeah.
Now, I could go along the street from where I lived as a child, and that long street would be something in the region of 600 meters, and there was 2 cars along that whole length along there, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the reason I mention that primarily is if we didn't have cars, then we had to walk everywhere, run everywhere, and bike everywhere if we had a bike, and that sort of thing. There was nothing on inside. There was no IT stuff. There's no mobiles. There was no laptops. There's no anything along those lines. The television came on at 5 o'clock at night. Yeah, wow. For children's hour. Yeah, you got the news at 6 o'clock. You got the news again at 9 o'clock, and that was it. You know, so ultimately, when you're asking about running, my life was spent running primarily because there was little else to do. You know, we played all the kids' games, the cricket and the football and the chasey and all these little games and one thing and another. But running was just instinctively, it was one way of getting from A to B quicker than what you would have got if you'd walked, and being so healthy and fit and one thing and another. It just came naturally to us, you know.
Yeah.
If I can just go on just a little bit longer, and what he said was at Christmas when I was a kid, and I'm talking probably from the age of 5 up to 9 or 10 years of age, I always got 2 or 3 sports books, and these were like almanacs, and within those sports books, wrapped up in beautiful Christmas paper, there was a boatload of stories going on from, you know, from football to running, to athletics, to rugby, to cricket, to F1 racing and all the rest of it. So I would leaf through them till I found a photograph that kind of caught my attention. And the ones that caught my attention were either footballing through Bobby Charlton and Tommy Finney and all these other guys, mm-hmm. or the athletics ones. They were the ones that I liked to read and everything. So once I'd read those, they were a little bit like they were fairy tales in many respects. Look at Zatopek, who won 3 gold medals and won Olympics and everything, and even the Czechoslovakian army and things as well. So that kind of took us a level higher, because once you dream, you start to try to make your dreams come true. And ultimately, I think that was a big part of my growing up there as well. I was lucky in that regard, I think, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's...
Just two seconds and then we can kick this one into touch. The next step for me was in 1966, Jim Alder, local athlete, came along. And he started winning gold medals in championships events. And he was just the first kind of touchable local athlete.
Yeah.
Who was real quality, world class, you know. And I've known Jim now for 40-something years. But certainly watch him going through Morpeth in an open-top car when I was 14 or 15. Again, it got your dream again. It can be done.
Yeah.
You know, it can be from USA or wherever. And so Jim was a big part of my early schooling as well within the running element anyhow.
Yeah. I've spoken to, we've had Jim on the podcast before. Yeah, it was quite insightful. Obviously being a legend and doing what he's done in the sport, being as well known as he is, I think a lot of people got a lot out of that. So it's funny that you mentioned Jim. Yeah.
Jimmy is like me in several ways, but one of the ways he's like me, I'm like him, that he's incredibly honest. He's forthright with his views.
Mm-hmm.
And if that upsets him, then he doesn't mind anyhow. He said, well, that's the way what I think, and et cetera, et cetera. And I quite like that, you know.
Yeah.
Today's world is pretty correct in many respects, but being British in one thing or another, speaking your mind shouldn't offend people. It should be a nod. Well, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. You're right. Oh, man. But yeah, so Jim kind of inspired you again. He was that touchable athlete. So when did you decide you wanted to do these sports competitively?
I was always competitively, you know. Tommy, if I mention my books through this, I'm not doing it as a sales pitch. I really couldn't give a toss if anybody buys it. Do it for money or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's a story in the first book whereby I give an indication of the first race I had when I was 4 years of age. And I remember it like it was yesterday. And I'll not go through the details because that would be about 4 or 5 pages or what. It'd be too much.
Yeah.
But what used to happen was in the 50s again, not everybody had televisions. Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so what happened was my cousin, John, who was 3 years older than me, used to pick myself up and my elder sister, Linda, who was 18 months older than me, and would go and watch a television further along the estate that we lived on as a guy. And he shut the curtains and all this. It was like going to the pictures, you know?
Yeah.
On one of these journeys up, John, being the alpha male of the group, being 3 years older than myself and Linda, organized a race. Now, the bit of pavement that race was on is still there now. So occasionally when I walk over, I look back on that period, 1955, and I think that the three was lining up there on this dark autumnal night, and then they'd say, ready, steady, go, and then would sprint it. That was my first race. I finished third of the three because I was 3-4 years younger than the other two. But it upset us. And that was, you know, I can remember those memories. and racing Linda on the way back home, and eventually I beat Linda. Still right. Slept a bit better than I would have done if I hadn't have done, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that time then I joined school, and of course at school everything's competitive.
Yeah.
Like it or not, you race, you play football, you want to maybe be top of the class in English or whatever. Not for me, but certainly with the more active activities.
Sports, yeah.
Yeah, for me it was just a draw. I was enticed into it all. I loved it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. And so when did you realize that you were good at? Well, I guess it might be different for each of them. For each of running, cycling, and swimming. When did you realize you were good at each of those events, each of those sports?
Well, at the time triathlon came along, I always believed in that I was 30 or 31. So I was
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
3 and thereabouts makes it seem incredibly old now, but I was a very experienced marathon runner. I'd won a Northeastern Counties Marathon. I'd been second in Cleveland and won some more Northeastern medals. And the Northeast at the time, Tommy, ruled the athletic world. Certainly within the UK.
Yeah. What year are we talking now? Are we talking like the 70s?
70s, yeah. And into the 80s.
Yeah.
And to win those competitions, whilst they might seem fairly trivial now, they were meaningful. You know, I was on the front page or in the back page, front page of the Journal, back page of the Evening Chronicle for several days after winning one of those events, you know.
Wow.
And yeah, there were people kicking around like Brendan Foster and Steve Cram and so many others, you know. So, but then triathlon came along 2 or 3 years and I couldn't resist it. And I remember sitting in the staff room at work at Ashington Sports Centre, and this little article written by Brendan Foster, funny enough, who was working for Nike at the time, said that this new sport was taking over America. And I just looked, wow. Swimming, cycling, and running. My running was well documented. I was a good swimmer. I was an ESA swimming teacher. When I was a kid, when we used to race our bikes, which is the only kind of history I had on it, I used to be very good. I used to win those races and things. So I thought, well, I'm going to give this a crack, you know.
Yeah.
But what I was really worried about at the time was moving into triathlon and maybe wasting more years that I would have been good at running, if you see what I mean.
I
had to maintain my running mileage while just starting on swimming and cycling. That's how I got into triathlon. And I had a lot of early success because I trained like a Trojan, and I knew how to train.
Yeah.
I had an incredible cardiovascular system, an incredible body. You know, from everything done with it, and my age didn't hold us back one iota. I found that was beneficial being 31. But for the most part, when I raced in triathlon, the people I was raised were 10 years younger than I was. So I was always looked upon as being old.
Yeah.
Elderly, if you like, you know? So, yeah.
So then just to zoom out a little bit then, so back to your running then. So you said you and we obviously mentioned at the start about the Northeastern Counties Marathon Championship. Were there other events that you did, or was it mainly marathon that you focused on when you were a younger runner?
Yeah, when I was in the Marines, I did everything. I mean, I did a marathon when I was 18 in the Marines because I got a trip to Hong Kong out of it. God, that was a killer. You know, I'd won the Commando Cross Country Championships, the Royal Navy Cross Country, and I was invited to do a marathon on the back of a 22-minute race. You know, so a huge learning curve in one thing and another. But Morpeth Harriers, taking me back to that period there, Morpeth Harriers was renowned for its cross country and its road running as opposed to being on the track.
Right.
Yes, so a lot of what I was doing was cross country, and it was road running, and they were all distances from perhaps about 5K up through to marathon, rather than kind of 800 meters and 1500 meters. I didn't have the innate speed to do well at those two events. But the longer the event was, the better I got. I knew how to suffer for me. That was the bottom line. I can put up with pain.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing within endurance sport, you know? Yeah.
Oh, must be, of course, yeah. And so then we go back to your triathlon then. So obviously you're really good at running already. You're a good swimmer. Like you said, you're a coach. And how long did it take? Do you think that your swimming and your cycling ever got near the the level of your running? And if so, how long did it take to get to that level?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. If I could review my life again, if somebody could say to me, "Okay, you can go through all this again, what would you like to do?" But you've got to be top class now. Okay, you've got to be a professional. Then I would choose cycling. I would have been a better cyclist than I ever was a runner. I'd an innate capacity for cycling. I won 80 bike races between 50 and 60 years of age.
Oh wow!
That within itself is quite incredible when I look at that, and racing the 25s and the 10s and the 100 miles and all this sort of thing. And I was beating the people half my age, you know, and beating them well and one thing else. So cycling came to me a lot easier than the running did. The swimming was my weakest event. I didn't learn to swim when I was a kid. We didn't go to school to swimming with schools when I was a kid. So you learned an occasional time that perhaps you had enough money to get into the swimming baths at Ashing, which was 7 miles away.
Yeah.
So I developed a feel for the water like to do now. You know, I was 30 when I started ploughing up and down the pool every day, 7 days a week, you know, 31 days a month. But I could make it up in the bike, and I could, I was a very, very good runner off the bike. I could run 32 minutes for 10K, flat out, you know.
Yeah.
So the event was never over till it was over, because my running was very good, my biking was good, and my swimming, I was always in the top eighth of the field. But there was people within that who were Olympic swimmers, and I wasn't in the cast they were in. They were phenomenal. But then they'd lose it on the bike, they'd lose it on the swim, you see?
Yeah.
That's the way it went.
All right, yeah. Wow. So if you look back at your triathlon career then, obviously, and you mentioned, obviously, it wasn't a professional career. It was amateur, but you were still doing these, basically getting professional results from all the work you were doing. If you were to look back at your career, what would you say your most memorable races and events you've participated in are?
I suppose in 1983, I took part in the first ever national triathlon championships.
Okay.
I just had a feeling I was going to be very good. I didn't know until I actually competed with the best in the country. And with the first two nationals, the short course and the long course, I finished runner-up in both. So I knew, you know, you couldn't book the results. I was right up there, right at the top. And then I was kind of built on it from there. That would be 1983. And then I won the national championships in 1984. And myself, a guy called Steve Russell, were the first ever two-man Great Britain triathlon team. Having finished second runner-up in the long course, the World Championships were down in Nice.
Yeah.
We'd never even thought about that. You know, it was a long way away. And I was at work one evening about a week after this event, this long course event, the Nationals, and I got a telephone call from a guy called Alec Hunter. Mm-hmm. And the telephone came through at work through the tunnel. He had Mike Harris come to reception, telephone call. So I went down there, and he said, "Mike, I've been trying to get a hold of you. We've got an invite to the World Championships, and he's all paid for." And he said, "Yourself and Steve Russell." And he said, "Can you make it?" And I had to go up and see the boss to get time off, you know. I don't know whether we'll be able to pay you for it, but if you're going to go, then you're going to go. And so we went to tour for the first time, you know, and the Americans were way above the rest of us. They were all professionals and weren't in California as opposed to the North, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. So, and from that point onwards, we just developed. And the first 5 or 6 years, I won loads of events, small ones, big ones, et cetera, you know. Learning curve as well. But I think in answer to your question, in 1986, I began to concentrate on Ironman events. I hadn't done one.
Mm.
And all my training went into doing exceedingly long sessions, and I would get my brother-in-law to drop me off in Edinburgh on the bike.
Yeah. So just before you go on that, what can you just explain what actually is in an Ironman for those that are listening that don't actually know?
No problem. It seems incredibly extreme, but a lot of people are doing it now, you know, so the ordinary person can do this, so don't let it put anybody off. But what it is a 2.4-mile swim, open water.
Okay.
When I did mine, you weren't allowed wetsuit sailors. You had to be trunks, you know. And you know, after the 2.4 miles swim in the lake or the sea or whatever, then you go and you do 112 mile on the bike. You get off the bike and then you run a full marathon. And that's your Ironman event, you know.
That's insane.
The way that event came about, by the way, this might be quite interesting.
Yeah.
Was the first one done in Hawaii. And what these guys, these military guys from USA, in Hawaii at that particular time, they had a 2.4 mile ocean swim competition. They also had a 112 mile bike ride around the island of Hawaii, and it was a Hawaiian Ironman, sorry, the Hawaiian Marathon after that. So they put the three of them together, invited the fittest people that they knew to compete in that event, and that became the Hawaiian Ironman, you know. And the rest of triathlon kind of copied that, but with shorter distances to make it more competitive, I suppose, and everything. I mean, the main thing with that, when I said it's for everyday people as well, you just pace yourself, you know. That's the key to that sort of thing. Now, Tommy, you're phenomenal, different from where I was. I mean, you go back to the kit I was using, did the swimming trunks, you know. On the bike, it was a, what you call a 531 steel bike with ordinary wheels. There's no disc wheel, there's no tri-bars.
Yeah.
And for the marathon, well...
The shoes, yeah.
What do you do to run it? Yeah. But different from what they're doing now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you were saying that this is your most memorable event you've participated in, this Ironman?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. Okay. It was an experience. Somebody once said, I don't know who it was, but once said that, you know, if you want to race, then run 100 meters. If you want to experience, run a marathon.
Okay. And
it's a bit like that, you know. Fortunately, not everybody wants to swim 2.4 mile in Seglund and 12 mile, which
yeah,
is just as,
I don't.
Not enough competitions. But that was in 1986 when I did that.
No, yeah.
What I didn't do that year was I didn't win any British championships or place in any, because I was concentrating on the Ironman. So when I moved into 1987, I was 37 years of age, and I'd been written off, you know. But what I had in 1987, I won the Hartley British Championships. I was British Grand Prix champion. I won about 14 other events. And I said, this was at 37.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're reviewing me again and putting us on the front cover of magazines and things. Where before, it was, no, he's a has-been, he's 37, for God's sake. You know, he's had a bad year in 86, despite the Ironman record.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't fashionable, Tommy. I was working as well. You know, I wasn't in the prevent. I mean, we had guys in, during those times who were wintering in California and wintering in New Zealand and Zimbabwe. And here I was in little old Woodrington here doing 5-6 hour miles in the rain and the snow, you know, 5 or 6 hours on a bike in the rain and the snow and coming back and going running and one thing and another and sitting down having Sunday lunches with the kids. And
yeah,
I've been different.
Yeah.
Hence, you can write 3 books when you have a story like this to tell, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to talk about those books in a little bit as well, so.
Yeah. I can say that when you're talking about myself, like, is it, I wasn't some pompous or arrogant. I'm not better than anybody else. Approximately my where I'm at, I worked harder. That's the way I like to think about it, you know.
Yeah. Oh, amen. Yeah, and that's important. Well, there's a quote that I've got here that I want to read out about your hard work. So, but I'll get to that in a little bit. But while we're on the subject of memorable races, do you have a worst race that you remember? The one that didn't go well.
Period of worst races.
Oh yeah.
1985, I lost my British title by 3 seconds. No, that wasn't a bad race. I just wasn't quick enough in the sprint towards the end of it. I could have won that. I got tactics all wrong in one another. But slightly later than that, I had 3 races in succession where I punched it twice in 2 of them. And then I got sent the wrong way in the 3rd one. Oh. And these were events down south that was costing me money to get to drive to, you know, with 2 kids sitting in the back of the car and this sort of thing. And then
yeah.
You know, and then you look to the heavens My God, well, what is wrong? Why have I deserved this? This, you know, it was just a period of bad luck. So three races, and one of those was the London Triathlon. And I got up to second position on the bike with that one, which meant I would have won the event.
Yeah.
And I punched, unbelievable, hundreds and hundreds of people there, media and one thing and another. And there's me by the side of the road fixing this puncher.
Oh.
I still finished sixth.
Okay.
But when you go home, you think, what a waste.
Yeah.
Just bad luck, you know. What can you do about that? You kick it in the touch and, yeah, well, let's go swimming in the morning again and start off again, you know.
Yeah.
So I can't put my finger on one, Tommy, but that period I'll never forget.
You know? Oh, dear. Well, you learn from that, don't you? You learn from that.
Well, yeah. You either give up or you get stronger by it, you know. Yeah. So there you go.
No, good for you. Good for you. Well, let's talk a little bit about your training. I think now would actually be a good place to say what you. So basically, in the prologue to your first book, you wrote this. You said, "I don't think anybody has ever trained as consistently hard as I have, or for so long. I've won all my events by myself with no outside assistance and with very little support from any quarter. Never even had a coach to mop my brow or discuss my highs and lows of athletic participation. I've won not because I'm a talent, but rather because I'm tough, hard as nails, ultra determined, disciplined, and possibly above all full of personal pride. As such, I can only ever give my best. Every race and sporting competition I've done endorses my individual identity. It proves who and what I am." That quote is killer.
Really? Yeah.
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 So, yeah, talk about that. Talk about how that was embodied in your training, and especially about how you said that you didn't have a coach to mop the sweat off your brow or something like that. Like, what? Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I've never had a coach, primarily because in the athletic world, you know, I was in the Marines for 9 years, straight from school.
Mm-hmm.
So at 15 years of age, I went away. I left Morbus Harriers and I carved a life out for myself in the Royal Marine Commandos. With the Royal Marines, I boxed for the Marines. I played hockey for the Marines. I had a talent for that. And obviously, I ran cross-country in athletics as well. But there's also a picture in one of those books which shows you my training diaries, of which I've got 50.
Yeah.
So that means they started around about 1975. And before that, I had a few handful of scraps of paper written in Singapore when I was doing jungle warfare in Hong Kong and places like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not prone to making that exaggerated statement. So now I look at all these diaries. By the way, when you mentioned Jim before, Jim Waller, Jim said to me one time, he said, "Did you know his biggest mistake in the world was not keeping his training diaries?"
Yeah.
When I look at mine now, and believe it or not, talking to you now, I've got all these diaries around us with bits and pieces in and one thing and another, and I say, God, it's unbelievable. If this had been somebody else, I would be saying, you couldn't have done that. It'd be impossible. And yet every single day, I religiously put down all these little bits and pieces in my diaries. There's one here on the 15th of February, 1986, where I've got AM, bike 4 minutes, 4 hours, 10 minutes around Bellingham and Chollerford and Woodburn. PM, swim 3,000 yards, and PM, run 5 miles. That's one day. Now, I'll not bore you with it. There's 7 days that are pretty much all the same as that, and yet I was working as well as doing this, you know?
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
With regard to the mileage, and again, I'll be incredibly honest with you, we didn't really have a lot of computers those days. So a lot of my journeys on the bike were measured by car, as were the running circuits that I did in one thing and another. And the swimming was pretty genuine because there were 25.
Cool, isn't it? Yeah.
Feet up one thing and another. But at the end of every week, I was doing 25 hours training. So I was kind of training 6 o'clock in the morning, swimming. I was running during my lunch hour. Up to 8 miles, and then when I got in at night time, I was going out on the bike for 2 hours. That was normal. Now I was a self-defense trainer, so after the swim I'd get to work, and then with the police we used to do self-defense training judo suits, would you believe, which kind of an indication of the quality of what we're doing. And we had spent 3 hours on the Celtic men's defence match, throwing people around and all this sort of thing. Go run at lunchtime, and get back on the mat for 3 hours, and go on the bike at night time. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Man, that's intense.
Well, do you know, when you write autobiographies, I mean, you can't make it up.
Yeah.
You got to be honest, you know. And when I look at this stuff I've done, I'm like, show me another guy on the planet who took this. You know?
Yeah, I'm literally looking at the picture of the of your training diaries that you sent me. I'm just like, how do you fill this up with training? Like, this is a lot of stuff. There's a lot of books that I'm looking at right now. Just yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what, you know, initially, can I tell you what, the reason I wrote the book, the books, it came about because, am I okay talking like this, Tommy? I'm not talking too much?
No, keep it going, man. I'm enjoying this. Sure. Yeah.
In 2012, I took early retirement from the police when I was 60. It was either jump or be pushed. They were getting rid of a lot of staff. And okay. My grade that I was on was not a healthy grade for them. They were probably paying so much money, or they thought they were.
Okay.
So I jumped. Then the next year, the Olympics came around in 2012. And round about that time, I was a totally forgotten person. I didn't have a job. I was still training as hard as I always train. I was still doing well, winning cycling races and all the rest of it. But I was kind of a nomad. I was somebody who's had their life in one thing or another.
Mm.
And I got a call from a guy called John Lowes. Now, John was an ex-police sergeant who developed osteoporosis, and he went from being 6'2", physical training instructor in the police force, to being 5'4". A wonderful, beautiful guy who died a few years ago. And John rang us, and we sat talking, and one of the first things he said was, when am I going to see you running with the Olympic torch? You know? And I said, oh, John, I said, you've got to have somebody put you forward for these things. It's a little bit like getting medals, and you know you can't put yourself forward for. No, I wouldn't have dreamt of doing that anyhow.
Yeah.
And he said, surely your family or somebody would have put you forward. And everybody who was anybody, including kids 13-year-old and pop stars with all their lipstick on and all the cosmetic makeup and all around running with this torch and one thing and another. And I'm sitting there with it, and thinking, what a career I've had. And nobody knows who I am.
Yeah.
My neighbours don't know who I am or what I've done, and why should they, you know? So they're again, I'm sound pompous. So I thought, on the bike, why not? I think I'd write a book, if only for my grandson.
Yeah.
So ultimately, when I die, then he'll pick something up like this. He's, oh, you see what my granddad did? You know, I know, and of course, with the Marines and all the rest of it, and being, I was born in Malden, the bits and pieces were different. I went to boarding school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then there was a story there that was more than just running and winning a race or whatever. And then sitting on a bench on a television program or being interviewed. Or I've never had that. I've never even wanted that, to be honest with you. This is good as it gets with me.
Yeah. Talk
to somebody like yourself who's clearly enthusiastic and knowledgeable and asking the good questions as well, you know. But that was a hard time for me. Coming to my working career was over, and where do I go? You know, but I've never stopped since. And as you know, I do park runs now.
Yeah.
I did not, flat out, absolutely flat out, you know. Mm. And I'm 20 minutes, 29. My last four have been sub 21. They hurt. Tell me they come to get eight, I tell you.
Yeah,
what.
Yeah.
But you've said somewhere, again, I'm hard because that's just the way I am. I cannot compete without giving my best. That's just simple fact.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But even with my working career, you know, I had 24 years with Northumberland Police, and then never had one day on the sick.
Never.
So that stops with that kind of discipline and that consistency that others get the benefit of as well.
Tell you what, they don't make them like you anymore. Goodness me, you're just a beast. What the heck? Yeah.
Yeah. But see, an answer to your question, you see why I wrote the books. Yeah. I mean, when I'm very old. And I'm not old now, I'm middle aged, 71, that's all I am.
Yeah, okay.
Then I'm sitting here by myself, and I'm a little bit lonely in one thing or another. I'll be able to pick up one of those books and say, oh, look at this. That was you, kid. You did that. Well done.
That's right, yeah.
It sounds sad. It's not meant to sound sad. It's I'm very happy, you know, with where I am now.
And, yeah.
With the benefit of good health. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I do want to ask, actually, just before we get a bit more into the book, I do want to ask about your training. Obviously, you've read a little bit out of one of your diaries there. I wonder, did you always train by yourself? I assume you did. And if so, how did you decide what you were going to do?
Right. Yeah, well, the answer to the first question was, did I train alone? Yeah, I've always trained alone on the basis that I didn't have time to wait for people. And I don't mean because I couldn't keep up with it. I mean, cycling to Morpeth perhaps is a lot to do, and then meet groups and then cycle around wherever. I didn't have time to do that, you know. Three-day training, two kids who were in school and all the rest of it, you know. So, yeah, I was always a trainer alone. And therefore, the training that I was doing was tailor-made for me. I wasn't anybody else or running or biking or swimming at their pace. It was for me. By the time I got to 30, and I mentioned this before, I was incredibly well schooled in all aspects of physical training. You know, it was my job, professional. It worked in one thing or that. I'd read all the books. I'd passed all the courses. But apart from that, I'd been self-coached. I knew myself inside out. I couldn't cheat myself.
Yeah.
You know? I knew what I wanted. I knew what my strengths were, what my weaknesses were. I knew how to work at it. And I took the good with the bad.
Yeah.
Support. Yeah.
So what were your favorite and least favorite things to do when you were training?
The favorite type of training?
Yeah, exactly. Favorite and least favorite.
Yeah, it depended. The swimming bored me rigid. It still does. I was swimming yesterday in a lake and one thing and another. And after 30 minutes, oh, God. You know when your head's in the water, you can't see much something.
Yeah.
And it was the same ocean pool where I did a lot of my swimming up and down and up and down, 140, 150, etc. Lengths and such. Oh, my God, you know, I got my brain came out of there. And I did that 7 days a week for years and years and years, you know, all on ambition. When you're up, you see a lot. When you're on a bike, you see even more in relation to nature and all the rest of it. And you talk it a lot as well.
Yeah.
You know, so my favorite sessions were probably running. I find the freedom of running, the simplicity of running, wonderful for me.
Yeah.
It makes us feel good and it makes us feel even better when I'm running well.
Yeah.
And biking for longevity is phenomenal. I could never have done what I've done without all the work I've done on a bike. Never been injured on a bike, Tony. All my injuries have come through running. Never injured in the water. Injured on the self-defense mats a few times. But certainly the bike, the longevity you get on a bike, being non-weight, as you know, and with swimming being non-weight, Brian, good for you. And combining it with the running where you get the impact, which is good for your bones and stuff as well.
Yeah.
High afternoon, you have a terrific all-round sport, which is interesting as well.
Yeah. So what sort of injuries did you get when you were running?
Oh, God, name it. when I returned to triathlon when I was 64, just to see what it was like, and I hadn't run for quite a while because I was racing on the bike and one thing or another, I got everything. Achilles, I had glute problems, I had groin problems, I had calf problems. Oh, my knees ached, you know.
And you just kept on going?
What I did was I eased off and I came back again. I eased because there wasn't many alternatives, you know. I was like, what are you going to do if you don't do this? I was playing with bands as well at the time, by the way. So I kept with it, and there you are. Well, it's 71. I'm running. I'll go sub 20. You watch for a 5K.
Come on. Let's do that.
I do the right training. I know what's good for me, what I need to keep away from. I'm here. But it is another thing, Tommy. It worries us now because 71 years shouldn't be doing this. It shouldn't be hurting this much.
Mm-hmm.
So within another year, I'll exercise as opposed to training. That's what I hope.
Yeah.
I don't believe that at my age I should be hurting myself this much. I don't want to get 75, 80 if I get there and be limping all over the place.
Yeah.
People used to be an athlete, this guy. Would you believe it? Good God. You know, I need to at some time say, enough. For God's sake, get laid. Do something else.
Yeah.
But I always exercise because it's good for us, you know?
Of course, yeah. Oh my goodness, wow. Yeah, so I'll just ask this now before I forget, because I didn't write this down. So obviously you're at the peak of your fitness and your career, I guess, in your late 20s, early 30s to mid 30s, right? When you're doing the triathlons and everything, and winning the events, and you've won the marathon and all that sort of stuff. When did you stop? Because obviously you came back at the age of 64. When did you stop? And then why did you stop? Basically, did you like see a massive fall off in your times, or was it just like, what was the reason behind that?
Yeah. Do you know, every time you reach something like a 30 or a 40 or a 50 or whatever,
mm-hmm.
look at the 30 thing, but when I get to 30, I'm going to ease off. When I get to 40, I'm going to ease off. When I get mm-hmm. to 50, I'm going to ease off. Now, I've done that all my life. It's just that every time I've reached those numbers, I've been superbly fit. So there's no point in stopping now, you know. Go on in another few years and see where you get. But the racing that I did between 50 and 60 on the bike, the longevity I got during this, and that, you know, I was riding really fast times in one thing and another.
Yeah.
Was due to riding the bike as opposed to running. So when I got back in triathlon at 64, my biking was exceptionally good. I was finishing top three in relation to triathlon split times from fields of 250 on the bike at 64.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and swimming, well, I've always found swimming easy. I could take a year off, get back in the water and swim quite, quite good, but yeah. I'm not the quickest swimmer in the world. And in the running again was just a learning curve.
Yeah.
I had to adjust, if you like, you know. Yeah.
So what was when you came back and you realized you weren't as fast as you were when you were younger, did that, like, how did you mentally react to that?
No, I knew that would be the case. Initially, I thought I'll do a triathlon. You know, at 64, I'll do a triathlon. And the first one I did, I was 20th. From 250. The year after, I was 12th from 250, you know. In that particular time, I was 67, 68 years of age, that sort of thing. So I was invariably getting quicker, but what was preventing me from getting even quicker was the fact that your cardiovascular changes. It doesn't change in response to endurance. It changes in effect that when you are, and I know you know this, but just for others, maybe, when you're in your 30s, you know, you have a maximum pulse rate of 180, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
When you're 64, your maximum pulse rate is 155. There are limitations that come with age that you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Except maybe grind out a 6-minute mile pace or 6:30 mile pace as opposed to doing 5 minutes miles per or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So with age, as you know only too well, there are limitations that come with it, and you just have to be sensible with it. But it doesn't change your mindset. It's still racing.
Yeah, true.
So you're trying your best. Yeah.
That's so good. Just two quick ones. Number one is, have you ever done the Great North Run?
No. No, I never did the Great North Run, and the reason I didn't was because I live at Woodrin,
okay.
And to do the North Run, you've got to get Newcastle and South Shields. Now, that wouldn't have been an issue, but with all them thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and I was doing triathlons and things at the time, it was easier for me to go down to Jervis Bay and run 20 miles by myself and come home and get my dinner, you know?
Yeah.
So the appeal wasn't for me, but I think they're terrific for 90. And people, it just wasn't for me, you know.
Okay, fair enough. So you don't feel like you missed out or anything?
Sorry, say again?
You don't feel like you missed out on taking part in that event or anything?
No. I think if I'd done one 1981 or thereabouts, I would have had some good times, probably about 1.7, 1.8. I was never going to beat somebody like Mike McLeod, you know.
Yeah.
Mike was just superb.
Yeah.
It's just me. I used to race when I was a boy.
Really?
And even he was so much better than what I was before I joined up, you know.
Yeah.
No. I know his brothers, by the way, were both of whom were cops.
Oh, really?
So, I still see Paul quite regularly. He swims and does triathlon, one of his brothers, you know. So.
Nice. Yeah. And the other question I had was, so you said you joined the armed forces when you left school?
Yeah. 15-year-old.
Yeah, why did you do that? Was that just a requirement or something?
Well, basically, at 15, I'm still a dreamer. I've always been a dreamer, and the choice I had really was that I was either going to go to the pit, you know, to the colliery, the local colliery, and get an apprenticeship as an electrician or a fitter or something along that line. I didn't fancy that, going down that big black hole and struggling to go in the arm.
Yeah, that doesn't seem appealing. No.
And my dad had been in the Royal Navy. He was a petty officer. That's why I was born in Malta. And so I thought, oh, no, that looks good. You know, and you see that. But I mean, as a juvenile, thinking about getting a trip around the world in a boat, if you like, you know, and all paid for and everything, just sounded terrific at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And I didn't think it, and then I transferred in the Marines. But even then, I never thought about shooting anybody. It just sounded like a good thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And especially at the age of 15 and 16, you're a child. We were in the 60s and the 70s. We were children at that age. One got a clue. It's not like the way IT and the media, you know, the kids are much more worldly wise than what we were.
That's an interesting perspective, yeah. I never really thought of that. Okay, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your books then. So 60 Years an Athlete. So you've obviously touched on why you wrote those books and all that sort of stuff. But overall, what was the process like? How long did it take to write it? How did you go about getting it published? How many books have you written? I guess is a good question.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've wrote a trilogy of books now, Tommy.
Okay.
They're all autobiographical. The third one, though, is kind of what was I doing training-wise and work-wise, et cetera, et cetera, in order to win the events that I'd been doing. But the first book I started writing was when I was 64 and I had my first competition when I was four, which I explained before.
Yeah.
And it's been a good time to write a book, you know. And the autobiography, I just sat down on the laptop and I typed every single word. You know, you go back to your beginning. Where were you born? I was born on 11th of August 1951 in Malta. That's the start point. And what happened from there? And leads you on to somewhere else, leads you on to somewhere else. And before you know it, you've wrote the first 100 pages and you don't realize you've done it. Equal to it. And I would advise anybody listening to this, write an autobiography. Don't worry about where you've been or what you've done or whatever. Your family and people that follow you on will be interested in this a generation from now, two generations from now. And it's a far easier task than what you would think. One occurrence leads you on to another. School day, joining the military, to leaving the military, to growing my hair long, to playing in bands at this time, and then triathlon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was as easy as writing a school story when I was 8 years, you know. It was just logical in one thing and another. And I've wrote, I think, 800 pages over the three books. And if you'd said that to me when I was 63, I would say, oh, go away. whatever you've been drinking, you know. Then ultimately, when I put in that, I had 93,000 words with the first book. And I thought, well, what are you going to do? I hadn't got a clue what to do with it. So I went online and I got a local publisher at Whitley Bay called UK Book Publishing. I rang up and I said, I've wrote a manuscript with 93,000 words and I'm considering the possibility of turning it into some sort of book. And I said, do you do that sort of thing? And I said, oh, yeah. And I said, can I come and see you? Rather than talk on the phone, yeah, certainly. So I went in and I showed them what I'd got. Said, yeah, this is no problem. This is going to be pretty much interesting. Yeah. I had to pay for it myself. I did that and went, and then we put it together as a book. And that was the first one done. And the second one book came about because of the only questions I had people asking after the first book.
Yeah.
About work and pretty much the same as this conversation we use going. And there was so much humour in my life, Tommy. I had so many laughable bits and pieces. The second book was, excuse me, it was the bits in between the training and the working and one thing and another.
Yeah, filling in the cracks, I think you said.
Yeah, exactly. It was the laughable stuff. And I thought, well, unique because people write books when they're 25, autobiographies, because they've won a gold medal.
Yeah.
Done nothing else.
Yeah.
And yet my books are about so much, so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I hope it doesn't sound pompous, but that's just fact.
Right.
I got in touch with a UK book publisher. I said, well, another one. Could you have a look at it and see what you think? And so the second one was done. And again, I paid for that one. Yeah, went online at Amazon and Waterstones, and I bought 175 of each from the printers, which were coloured, and all of those have gone, which have gone locally in other places. And then I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, that's it, kid. You know what you're going to do now? And then I wrote the third one when I turned 70. Yeah. You know, a 70-year experiment, which is what my life's been. It's trial and error. It's this, that, and the other. And I thought, yeah, there's a story here, but trust me, there's no more after this. This is it. Whatever's there is finished, you know. But with each of those three books, there is probably five or six pages I would willingly rip out now and wish I hadn't put it, because I don't think then. But that done, yeah.
Yeah. So cool. So overall, then, I guess I'll ask you, what did you learn about yourself as an athlete? And what did you also learn about yourself through writing the trilogy of books?
Sorry, Tony, was the question there, was it?
Sorry. So the question was, what did you learn about yourself as an athlete? And what did you learn about yourself through writing the trilogy of books?
Well, writing the books was a lot easier than I thought, because I'm not an academic.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if within the third book, I put a lot of little things to people of meaning for. I had a headmaster at my first school when I was five.
Mm.
And I get shockingly inept reports. I was very, very average, apart from PE in games. We always got B plus and A in one thing or another. And this guy, this headmaster at the first school, he put a little comment at the end of one of these poor reports, and he put, Michael has other qualities other than academic. You know? And if he was still alive now, and I took him those three books, and I've wrote those, he said, my God, where did you get the inspiration from and the knowledge and the know-how to do that?
Yeah.
And I would look at him because I said, I don't know. I wanted to. I felt I could, so I did.
There you go.
And then he would have said, did Linda, my sister, not help you with that? Because Linda was very bright. She went to university. She was at grammar school. She ended up being the personal secretary to the leader of the World Health Organization. She was on the television regularly. Yeah. And here's me running races, you know. We slept in the same bed when we were kids and one thing and another. And she goes to that extent, you know, marrying an American lawyer and all the rest of it, you know. And I'll marry a girl, a lovely lass, who lives kind of 50 yards from where I lived, where I brought up. That's a different thing in the two of us. You would expect Linda to write the books. You would expect me to write them. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, another book of trend. But again, if you think you can do it, then do it. Start it, because the start point is the hardest thing you'll get to.
Yeah.
You'll just get into it, you know, like reading somebody else's book.
Mm. Yeah. No, fair. That's so interesting, man. Well, look, we're going to be coming to the end of this soon, but before we end it, I always love to do what is called the family round. So I've just got a few quick questions to ask you, and it's just to get to know you a bit more, just to see what you think about a few things. So I've got these questions prepared. Are you ready to give them a go?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. So number one is, what is a race that you always wanted to run?
Yeah, probably the Hawaiian Ironman would have been a very iconic.
Yeah, the original,
Dry athlete. We're too far away, too expensive. No, I was never going to get there unless somebody only come along and say, I'll pay for you to go.
Fair enough. All right, what about a location that you always wanted to run in?
I've run everywhere, Tommy.
Yeah.
I've run in jungles, I've run on Dartmoor, I've run in Achievius. Nice. I've run in hot places, freezing cold places. I've run everywhere, on beautiful beaches, as you know, in the northeast. I run them continuously, running through woodland and everything. I'm a nature buff. I love nature and one thing and another. So No, I've run and competed in just about everywhere I'd want to, maybe except from Hawaii. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So, a couple of questions here. Cross country, road, and track, can you rank them from favorite to least favorite?
Least favorite, yeah. Least favorite would be track. Regimented running around 400 meter track. Cross country, you come and you go, and you hit a hill and you fall back, and you hit another hill and you go forward. There's a with endurance sports in particular, you don't know how good you can become. You know, you never finish trying, whereas sprinters are born. I think endurance athletes can be made. So cross country, I got a lot of enjoyment from that, and but running on roads suited my stride. Yeah, I had a pretty decent action, you know. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you've spoken a bit about what your favorite out of the triathlon events is. What would you rank them in terms of difficulty? So swimming, cycling, and running.
Swimming was probably the easiest for me, but it was my worst event. The easiest for me was cycling. I took to the bike like I'd been doing it all my life, and I hadn't touched a bike for about 15 years or something, you know. And the first bike was much too big for us. I went into a shop in Ashington, and there was a bike on the wall there, and it was the best looking bike. It was a 212 pound, and I said, "Do you do HP?" And he said, "Yeah, it can be worked out." I said, "I'll take that one."
Nice.
You know, it was like putting on a pair of nine shoes when you're seven. Maybe two. Everything was wrong with it, but I used it for the first 2 to 3 years, and I still did well. You
That's
know,
good.
that's why I said before there, if you said, "Well, what event would you be really good at?" I'd probably been a good domestique, at least in a professional team on a bike. I would have been good because I would have been tough again, and I would have been good in the hills with the leader behind us following us through. That sort of thing anyway. Yeah.
Oh, nice. All right. Okay, what is your favorite race that you've ever seen?
What I've ever watched?
Yeah, ever watched? Yeah.
Yeah, YouTube. Again, I'm going back to my youth. I mean, the YouTube wasn't in my youth, but now when I go there and I put in Emil Zatopek's name, and I see him winning his three gold medals and the
Yeah.
thingy. You know, and that sort of thing. I mean, I loved watching that sort of thing. Yeah, anything in black and white, I suppose, for me, is more atmospheric. It goes back to a different time, you know.
Yeah.
Medals mean money.
Yeah.
Medals mean notoriety. In them days, the medals were all they got. They didn't get money to go with it. They
Yeah, it
went
was just
back.
the pride of it, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I love the romance in that, Tommy.
Okay, who's your favorite? I feel like you've already answered this. Who's your favorite athlete?
Yeah, that's dead simple. I mean, I've got to say Jim Walter because he kick-started mine. I'm not saying me and Jim were close or one thing or another when I was 15 and he was 26. He was an icon from a distance. I didn't have the balls, excuse me. I didn't have the gumption to go up to him and say, "Hi, my name's Mike. How are you?" You know. So I watched him, and I watched what he did, and I watched how he conducted himself and everything. And Jim wasn't a star, you know. Jim was never a glamorous person in one thing or another. There's lots of stories I wouldn't repeat on here about Jim, which are very funny. But he was a man's man. I mean, in the nicest possible way. And he was an iconic hero who I've got to know better over the years.
Yeah,
So
wonderful.
Jed would be one of them. The other would be Emil Zatopek, and watching what he did, because again, Emil had the worst running style in the world. No shock, you know, his face all covered in spit and one thing and another. And so he was totally unglamorous again. But what a
Yeah.
wonderful runner, and what a wonderful, wonderful man by all accounts as well, when you read the stories about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. All right. Since you did boxing, did you watch much boxing? And if so, do you have a favorite boxer?
A favorite boxer would be probably, I would think, Muhammad Ali. I would think he was bullshit. He was in your face. There was a lot not to like about him. But my God, what an athlete. Wasn't he? Was phenomenal, you know. And then some of the middleweights as well were Sugar Ray Leonard
Oh,
and
yeah.
people were you know, I prefer the dancers more than the sloggers,
Yeah.
without being offensive.
Yeah.
So Muhammad Ali would probably be, as you'd expect, being from my era.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say that, to be fair. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the way his life finished, you know. I'm sad.
Yeah, sad, yeah. Okay, what's your favorite book?
My favorite book, well, the my first autobiography, followed by the second one, followed by. Tell you the thing, you know, I'm not actually a reader. You know what? I read books and that back to front, which says I get something about my mentality again. It's quicker. I mean, what I like about books is that you can open them anywhere and pick up a story.
Yeah.
You know, with novels and that, you've got to start at the front, you've got to work your
Oh
way
yeah.
good,
Yeah, that's
bad,
the
or,
thing, yeah.
you know. So I like books that are kind of autobiographies that you
Yeah.
can, you know, if you read the first chapter and you move on to page 45, you can still pick up a
You
thread.
still pick up the story, yeah.
I'm really sorry to say that's not really one book that I could say,
That's all right. No, that's
I
cool.
choose, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you've written a few good books, so yeah.
You know, there was a favorite film I've got, which was
That was the next
sort
question, yeah.
was it? Oh, beg
Yeah.
your pardon.
Oh well, go ahead, yeah. What's your favorite movie?
But the favorite film was Man of Bronze, which was by a guy called Thorpe, Jim Thorpe, who was an American Indian, who in 1912 won the pentathlon and the decathlon at the same Olympics. And but that was about 20 events. It was not the way it is now, you know. And I saw a film when I was at boarding school in black and white, probably around about 1965 or thereabouts, and it was called The Man of Bronze. And it was his start to life, where he was an orphan, et cetera, et cetera. And then he discovered that he had this innate athletic talent, and he went sky high, he won everything. He came back from the Olympics and he got into professional football, and because he was playing professional football, they took his two gold medals away from him, and he
Wow.
ended up being a pauper, being destitute, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it was a wonderful, wonderful story. I actually bought a DVD then a couple
Nice.
of years ago, you know. So that was probably my favorite film, I think.
Yeah.
And
Okay,
another
cool.
one, by the way, because you know I'm into music, Cadillac Records is a very good film as well, DVD. Cadillac Records is about Muddy Waters and Little Walter and all these blues icons, and the
Yeah.
Chess Brothers in Chicago, who started recording them all. That's a terrific film as well, with beautiful music in, you know. So that's a good one if anybody's stuck for in the end of music and you like blues and stuff.
Yeah.
Cadillac Records is exceedingly good as well.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, I'll ask this question now then. What instrument do you play? Because you said you were in bands.
I play two instruments. I play guitar, and I play blues harmonica. I've got blues harmonica sitting in front of me here now. You
Nice.
know,
Nice,
but
nice.
yeah, that's what I play. I've always carried a harmonica around with us, so when I get drunk and I have to walk home, yeah, that's it.
Whoa.
That's a blues harmonica.
All right
Well,
then. Hey, nobody's ever performed on this podcast. Thank you.
no, that means I'll never get on another one. But that's terrific.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, two more questions. Who is one person that you would like to hear on this podcast sometime soon?
You've had Jim on, haven't you, Jim Aldrin?
Had Jim on, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you who. Perhaps I coached a young lad you probably heard of, maybe not, Daniel Dixon, who's a 10-year-old triathlete, and I coached Daniel for 3.5 years, and then we amicably parted about a year ago, and he got another coach from America. But Daniel, how do I say this nicely? He hasn't really had a life. He's been a professional athlete since he left school. But he's a wonderful young man. He's got his manners are terrific. In 3.5 years, I never heard him swear or anything along those. So if you're looking for a guy who's maybe a role model for other young athletes, then maybe Daniel would be good, you know.
Wonderful.
If you did it now, he hasn't really won much yet, but he will do. He will win things. So you could do it now, and you could say, "I'll come back to you when you've won a couple of medals." Whatever,
well, I'm
know?
Sure he'd have an interesting story. So I'd like to, we'll see if we can arrange something. That sounds good.
Yeah, nice. And he's terrific as well. His dad was a runner, Gordon, and he's got a young brother called Joe Dixon, who's also a very good runner now as well. Yeah.
Runs in the family. Nice.
I only live 2 miles from me, so. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful, yeah. Okay. I know I said 2 more questions, but then I realized I had 3. So, what is one thing on your bucket list? And then, do you have any hidden talents?
I don't think I've got any hidden talents. I think if I've any talent at all, it's kind of doing what I've done in the books. But I was never born special, Tommy. Right. I was never born to be good at academics or any. I struggled through school. I was average, you know. I liked history. I liked geography. I could learn those, but I wasn't good with maths and stuff like that, you know. So I suppose I made the most of what I got when I came into this world. My mother was very special. She's a beautiful person.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing on your bucket list?
Explain briefly what a bucket list is.
So in the sense of something that you would like to do, just one thing that you would still like to do.
I would like to be a great granddad. I've got a 9-year-old grandson now, you know, and I'm his granddad, and I'd love for him to have 2 or 3 kids and for me to be around.
Yeah.
You know, long enough to marvel at kids at that age and to smile every time you see them. I think that would probably be, that would do me really good, you know. I've got 2 smashing sons, and my wife, God knows, has put up with a lot, you know. So I'm lucky from that perspective, yeah.
Wonderful. That's so great. Well then, I guess the final thing to say is, do you have any advice for anyone that's getting into running or into triathlon and wants to be really good at it?
What I would say is probably what a lot of people have said before is, don't hesitate. Give things a try and never reach a point in your life. I said this to Daniel Dixon, whereby you get there and you think, I can't be bothered anymore. Because 10 years from now, you don't want to be sitting back thinking, I wonder what I could have done if I just stuck it a little bit longer, you know? I'll say most of us have got a talent. Some of the talent is latent. Some of the talent is not identifiable, but it'll be there. And if you have a talent for something, then pursue it, whether it be playing a mouth organ or playing a guitar or whatever it is, you know. Then give it your best shot. Otherwise, later on, you know, when you're getting older and wanting another, you don't have to have regrets just because you didn't try on enough. So, yeah, give it a try and see what happens. Make surprises on and others. That's another thing.
That's so great. Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, guys. Mike, is there any way that people can find you or get in contact with you?
I live at Widdrin. I do triathlons. I do park runs. I don't do Facebook, Tommy. I'm not into social media at all, which has been one of the downsides of writing books and such forth, and not being in a position to kind of promote them. And I've done very little promoting with the books and one thing and other.
Fair enough. No problem. No problem. Well, I would say to get your books if you want to. If you want to learn more about Mike, because he's put all the information out there, that'll be a wonderful way to get to know more about you. Let's say that. Yeah.
There's no mate. You know, in North America, Peace was 5,000 people that had to train. I was the one physical training instructor, self-defense trainer that they all had.
Yeah.
So I'm quite well in some respect, you know.
Yeah.
The way I know, if somebody comes up and say, "How are you?" and the call is Mick, then I know it's through music, I know it's through locality. Somebody comes up and calls us Mike, then I know that they've either been a cop or it's through sport, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I find out my identity and with other people. And,
awesome.
I'm presenting prizes, by the way, on the 9th of July at the QE2 triathlon. I'm also going to run it. I'll say run a compete in it.
Nice.
So, they're kicking around there, and then you want to come up and have a crack with us, that'd be terrific. It'd be my privilege to speak to you.
That's fantastic. Well, great. Well, yeah, so everyone that's been listening, thank you for tuning in today. Make sure you follow Ardent Run Club on Instagram and @thisisardent on all of our social media for updates on this podcast and us over here at Ardent. Subscribe to Ardent Run Club so you can be the first to know when the new weekly episodes come out. Any last words, Mike?
No, just a thank you to you, Tommy, for taking the time, getting in touch. And I mentioned it, I think, at the beginning, the middleman between us two, the two of us, was Ian Prodder, who works in Start Fitness.
Yeah.
And it said, would you? And I said, yes, and of course you. And you've been terrific. I'm a little bit nervous before this. And no, it's been really nice speaking to you. You're a good man.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. And I do appreciate you joining me today. This has been Ardent Run Club, episode 73, with Mike Harris, who runs in the family. See you next time.